Pay no attention to the giant carrot strolling to the back of the church. All right, are we pretty much all settled? I think so. So I wanted to share with you, the way that I work on messages is that I often will come up with a talk title and then I just get images of what I'm supposed to talk about. And this talk is called The Law of Three and Community, because we've been working a lot with this concept called The Law of Three, which I'll explain in just a few moments for those of you who may not have heard of it yet. And when I meditated on this title, I said, okay, you're supposed to talk about Spartacus, juice, rabbits, and community. I'm like, really? How's that going to work? But over the years, I've learned to trust my intuition, so we'll see if I can pull that off. You be the judge of it afterwards. Okay, so I'm going to start by talking about Spartacus. How many of you have seen the movie Spartacus, the old one with Kurt Russell, right? Yeah, you know the famous scene. Kurt Douglas, thank you. You're much older than Kurt Russell, okay. Yeah, Kirk Douglas, yeah. That was a good movie. Anyway, there's this legend, this story, and I actually YouTubed it and saw that it did actually happen. It was a repeat of the story, but evidently this guy went into Starbucks one day and he ordered a triple macchiato, trenti, whatever it's called, latte or something. I don't remember the names of all the drinks. I just get one thing. But what? He's going to heckle me all day. This is what happens when you give him the flowers, right? He's just going to heckle me all day. Anyway, he ordered it, and when it came time to write his name on the cup, as they do, he said, my name is Spartacus, S-P-A-R-T-A-C-U-S, Spartacus. So they made his drink, and they finished it, and they called Spartacus, Spartacus, triple mocha macchiato for Spartacus. And somebody stood up and said, I am Spartacus. And then somebody else, I am Spartacus, I am Spartacus. And soon the whole room was saying, I am Spartacus. And then in the YouTube video that I saw was modern, this man walked in, this big muscly man, this big sweaty men's with, I'm doing in living color now, by the way, men on film, big sweaty men's wearing just a little postage stamp of a loincloth and leather sandals. And he walked in all big and sweaty and he said, I'll take some foam with that. And then they all went away. But you know, that scene in that movie is so beautiful because it is so poignant. Because, you know, technically we're not Spartacus, but we also are Spartacus. Are you not Spartacus or are you Spartacus? And the answer is yes, we are both. Spartacus, a historical figure who led the revolt of the slaves, and Spartacus's DNA is our DNA, and we also are not literally Spartacus, but we all are Spartacus. So it's one of those paradoxes that we live with all the time. Now, I was thinking, if I was being truthful about who I am, or if you were being truthful about who you are when you went into Starbucks, you know, you might give them your name. I give them my Starbucks name, just because people struggle with Bonnie, but I give them another name. You might give them your name, but you might also give them your true identity, which might be, they would have to write in your cup, I am love becoming love. I am a center of love. I am non-dual reality claiming awareness for myself through grace. Now that's an awful lot to write on a cup. So maybe that's part of the reason we have community, so we don't have to write it on the cup at Starbucks, and we can come together and be all of those things together. So community and the law of three. That's check for Starbucks and check for community. I've said those two words, okay. So community and the law of three. Just in case you haven't been attending church lately, A, you're a big heathen. B, kidding. B, I'm going to explain what the law of three is very briefly, okay? In the law of three, it's a concept that was coined by George Gurdjieff, an Armenian scholar, and recently modernized in this beautiful book called The Holy Trinity and the Law of Three by Cynthia Bourgeau. And the law of three is a law of creation and world maintenance. And It's a creative process. So in the law of three, there is a denying, there's an affirming factor and a denying factor, first force and second force. And then these two kind of naturally balance out each other so nothing changes. And then there's a reconciling force that comes in when we allow it that causes something to shift and something to change, and a whole new creation is born out of that that can start a new law of three in process. Y'all got that? Affirming, denying, reconciling, something new that starts a new law of three process. I'm teaching a class on this right now, and it's a really big class, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and if you ask me if you can join it, I might have to say yes, because I can't control myself, but all that aside, I'm teaching this class on it, and the other day, we got kind of caught up in this conversation about how how Cynthia Bourgeau describes the action of the law of three, and it was one of those classes where I went home and I couldn't sleep because I knew that I hadn't explained it as well as I wanted to. I felt it really deeply, but I knew that I hadn't explained it as well as I wanted to, even though I think we got close. And the phrase that we were struggling with was something like this. I paraphrased it. She says that the law of three demonstrates how love becomes all creation. The law of three brings all things to their fullness, not by escaping createdness, but by consummating it. So, and the question was, what is escaping createdness and what is consummating createdness? And I thought and thought about that. We had a very lively discussion, as I said, and you know, to consummate something is to bring it into wholeness and to bring it into perfection. It means to me that spirit becomes matter, and spirit doesn't mind being matter. Richard Rohr says that matter matters to God, so spirit is delighted to become matter, and matter becomes spirit. They are both joined in each other, and they are something unique because of the combination of spirit and matter together in non-dual existence. Perfect sense, right? It makes perfect sense, sort of. I started thinking about it some more in terms of the word consummate, meaning being related to the word consuming, okay? That we can consume something. And, you know, I looked at the dictionary. The dictionary was very clear to point out that consume generally means use. I consumed 200 calories before I came to church today. I used 200 calories before I came to church today. Whereas consummate means to bring to perfection or wholeness or completion, something like that. We have a little animal leaving. Bye. Okay. What? I understand. Does he have an animal costume for later? Oh, good. I'm looking forward to that. Okay. All right. So anyway, back to consummation. Okay. No, I will not go there. Okay. So, you know, I started thinking about it in terms of consuming, because consuming can also mean just taking it in or being consumed by something. Has anyone here ever been consumed by lust? Please, raise your hand. Okay. Ooh, a lot of you, wow. Sexy, okay. perhaps consumed by joy, consumed by an inspiration, you know? And when you are consumed by inspiration, that inspiration consumes you, so it is the same thing. And then I thought, to make it really clear, I could demonstrate to the church in an object lesson what it is to be consumed, how matter becomes spirit, and how the law of three works in a really, really simple way, something that I do every single day that I hadn't thought of until now. So I have props, and I'm going to go up here and work with my props. All right. So get the speaker out of the way. Can you all see me past the flowers? Probably not. Okay. Don't mind me just rearranging the stage, Annette was very particular about the way the altar looks, okay? All right, so this is Trader Joe's cranberry juice. It has no sugar in it. Whenever I purchase it, they say, you know that stuff is nasty, right? I like it, but I wouldn't drink it straight, okay? This is plain water, right? Let's say that the water is the denying factor because it's passive. Let's say that this is the affirming factor because it wants to do something, it wants to create something new. Let's say pouring is the reconciling factor. And something entirely new is created, something that can create a new cycle of three when I drink it, because it becomes me and I become it. The nutrients in the cranberry juice and the water become my body and I become the nutrients in the cranberry juice and the water. That's how it works. It's a metaphor. Let's also talk about spirit and creation. okay? Let's pretend this is matter. Let's pretend this is spirit. The two join together. And they are one. They join together through a process, through pouring, through reconciliation, if you like. They are one. You cannot separate the cranberry juice from the water. They are one. So if you look in the mirror and you consider yourself, at one time you were a blank slate, some idea in God's mind or in spirit's mind or in love's mind, something poured itself into you and you are now one with that. Think of yourself as that clear chalice and something pours itself into you and that is who you are. You are a combination of what you were, say matter, and you are a combination of spirit, but it's also a whole new creation that can start. I'm not going to gargle with it. It'll go all over the place. That was my plan, but I'm not going to do it. Can start something new, okay? Now to make it on a more personal level, this is Bonnie's Bar and Grill, by the way. You're welcome to partake afterwards if you want some really, really, yeah, Julia Child. Yeah, I'd love to do the Chevy Chase version, but okay. If you want some really sour juice after church, you know, and don't be scared, we're not going to do communion, okay? Well, we are doing it. It's out there, and it's called prasad, but that's different. Anyway, we're doing, so let's do it on a personal level, this idea of spirit becoming matter and becoming one with matter and matter becoming spirit. In class, and often in this church, we talk about how imperfections and perfections are one, and how can that be? You know, we scorn ourselves for our imperfections, or we scorn ourselves for not being spiritual enough, or we scorn ourselves for all of the things that we think are wrong with us. But look at this. Let's call this our imperfection. And let's call this our perfection. And the two become one. And the perfection of this final product wouldn't be the same without the imperfection. Do you see that? Does that make sense? Is that something you can use in your life? I hope so. I live for that. So that's probably about the most profound thing I have to say right now, but of course, I have other things to cover as well. You know, that business about the perfection and the imperfection, I think that that's part of why we come together in community, is so that we can, community is an act of pouring. It is an act of all of us being together and having some type of grace pouring through us so that we can pour out into the world. I read about community in an article by Parker Palmer, who is a beautiful soul, beautiful writer, and he talked about how community is not a goal, it is a gift. He also had another definition of community that I thought was pretty funny. He said that his definition of community, in 1974, he started a community. In 1975, his definition of community was, it is the place where the person you least want to know lives right next door to you. And then in 1976, he had another definition. Community is the place where that person you didn't want to know moves away, but another one just like him comes and takes his place. And the point of that is perhaps there is work to be done on the self if that same person keeps arising in our lives. And community can help us see that. That's the act of pouring in community. It can help us see that. You know, we're using the law of three to cultivate an awareness of where our rough edges are, and then using the community to smooth us out and to create that opening for grace so that we can pour that grace into all things. I wrote this down, and I want to make sure I say it right. Community can be an opportunity for us to use the law of three to pour grace into everything we do for our own blessings and to bless the world, right? So that's why we come together in community. You know, I always refer to this place as a center of love and a healing vortex. Every time I say healing vortex, I look at that symbol because it is like a yantra, the symbol of the ceiling with the steps that it's supposed to draw in divine energy. And I believe that it does. I believe that the strength of this community and this center is in the community that we create. And again, part of that purpose of that community is to recognize wholeness and to recognize that we are an opening for divine grace to pour itself into us, and then we get to pour that divine grace back to one another and into the world. Which brings me to the concept of bunny rabbits. What in the world do bunny rabbits have to do with this? Why do we have bunny rabbits in church? Why are we spending, I spend a lot of my time talking about compost and pellets and hay and rabbit teeth and some other topics you don't want to know about, but ask Sue. She's an expert at this point. about how rabbits multiply. Very, very sexy. Yeah. Yeah. I had a rabbit that tried to multiply with my slipper one time. You know, anything... Anything small and furry, it's fair game. They are consumed by lust, okay? They certainly are. Yeah. What? Oh, I love all the heckling. It's so much fun. No, I'm serious. I really do. Let's do more, okay? Let's do more. So anyway, why rabbits? You know, I know people in the congregation have been puzzled as to why we're bringing rabbits here. And it happened actually as a coincidence. I think I shared with you before that I met with... a gentleman, I met him at a memorial for my good friend, one of her, she had a couple of memorials, and I met him at one of her memorials, and he's a chaplain up at UCSB, and he draws a lot of young people into his center, and he said one of the things that he does is he has a rabbit ministry, a bunny ministry. And so I, you know, was all over that. And then several of us who were interested in this went up there for a field trip. It was Deborah and Norm and Brock and me and Lonnie Cassidy and Jeff, what you call it, Nick Nowski, whatever his name is, and we went up there, and I remember on the ride back, talking to the people in the car, I was like, is the congregation going to think I'm crazy? Are they going to think I'm crazy? I mean, we're getting rabbits in a church. Did I hear a yes over there? Okay, yeah, all right, yeah, but you've come around. She sent me a card that said Attila the Bun on it, so she's come around. Yeah, and she's in charge of the naming committee. Uh-oh. Yeah. But anyway, so you know, and then the people in the car started talking to me about what a beautiful message it is, what a beautiful symbol of wholeness it is to have these bunny rabbits, and we're growing some of their food. Norm has already planted these beautiful raised beds, and we're growing their food, and then the bunnies are going to eat the food, and they're going to poop the food, and it's going to turn into compost that is going to grow more food so that they can eat more. Some of the food is going to go to us. Some of the food is going to go to homeless people. Some of the food is going to go where it needs to go. We're going to grow flowers, and it's this beautiful, beautiful symbol of wholeness and reconciliation and something becoming, or nothing becoming something and something becoming nothing. And what a wonderful place to be. What a wonderful place to raise up children, you know, because it's right in back of our youth and family program. So they can learn about kindness. They can learn about the cycle of life. They can learn about how things are transformed through intention. You know, it's just a beautiful and a wonderful thing. And the beautiful thing, too, is that, you know, Parker Palmer said that community is not a goal, it's a gift. And then he talked about how really super annoying people live in community with you all the time. I don't really find that here, at least not anymore. It's funny, the other day Brock took a picture of me and Annette standing by the garden, and I'm telling you, we looked like the children in the corn. It was scary. And it reminded me of the early days in this church, and this is so rude, I hate to say it, and I'm going to make it better. Okay, I'm going to say the bad thing first, and then I'm going to make it better. You know, when my early days, my first 2 years or so, I used to call the church of the corn, because because I didn't feel like people really got me or liked me or anything, and I would look out at the congregation and I'd see these cold eyes, like you were not one of us. Years later, I see that I was possibly the minister of the corn, and maybe that's why that was happening. But, you know, I have to say, it's like when I poured the juice into the water and talked about perfection and imperfection. There was imperfection there in my eyes. It may have been perfection for others. But there was a sense of imperfection, and then perfection kept pouring itself in, and it created something new. It created the center that we have now, which is incredibly beautiful. And it would not have the same luster and the same beauty had it not been for the Church of the Corn. Had it not been for the imperfection. So I celebrate the Church of the Corn, and that's why I feel like I can make jokes about it. I praise the Church of the Corn. I praise the minister of the corn. I praise all of you corny people who were there at the time. But that's what I'm talking about. That's what we can use in our life. You know, if we are stuck on one of our imperfections or if we are stuck on something that is not working, we can see by that simple act of pouring grace into it that it really is perfection in disguise. It is perfection, a perfection that is beyond the opposites of perfection and imperfection that is waiting to happen through us. And that is a wonderful thing. You know, if the metaphor helps for you, helps, do it. If you have to go to Trader Joe's and get some cranberry juice, tell them I sent you. you might want to taste it first. But it's a beautiful thing that we can all participate in. And you know, this thing about a community being problematic, you know, I would say that it's not really a problem, it's a process, and it's also a pouring. You know, in the building of the Rabbitat, that is a sub-community within the community, and we have a Rabbitat team. The Rabbitat is where their habitat, where they're living. And it's a team that is so incredibly graceful and so respectful of one another that we get along really well. And yet there are still challenges because we're dealing with a lot of different elements, a lot of things coming in. So some of the builders of the Rabbitat were telling me the other day that they are in the process of building something, and it's just not quite working. And one of the things to do is to call forth the third force, that reconciler of this affirming factor and this denying factor, the thing that wants to happen and the thing that doesn't want it to happen, and just step back and pause. And they have said that that allows a greater order of perfection and wholeness to come into the situation. So is there something in your life? Last week I spoke about, you know, pause and respect and appreciate and yearn for the solution. Is there something in your life where it feels like things are opposing each other, where things are pressing against each other, and can you just step back and breathe and allow a greater resolution to come through? You know, people were asking me, or they've asked me over the last couple of months, is the third force a way of surrendering? And yes, it is. It is a way of stepping back and seeing it and really fully acknowledging the givens of a situation. So I would call it more like the technology of surrendering, or a technology of surrendering. It's not the only one. And it's a technology of inviting in grace, inviting in the bigger picture that we can't necessarily see when we are fixated on one side or the other, or when we are fixated on the fact that these two factors seem to oppose one another. If we take a pause and step back, that higher order of wholeness and grace and goodness that is for us can come in. Happened with me in terms of the building of the Rabbitat. You know, I'm Germanic and I like things Germanic. I like things Germanic. I like things to happen on a schedule, on time, and I like things to be done. And the builders were contacting me and saying, you know, it's not going to happen as quickly as we thought it was going to happen. This thing is happening and this is happening, so it's going to be delayed. And I've worked in a church long enough to know that things hardly ever happen on time. So I had done pre-forgiveness, pre-law of three. And when they called and said that, I was just like, you know, what if this is taking longer than we thought because the perfect bunnies are coming into being? What if it is supposed to take longer than we thought? And what if there's something in your life that is taking longer than you thought? And what if that is happening because some other perfection is making itself known, is forming itself, some other perfection, some emptiness is getting filled with red juice to become something brand new to influence and bless and surprise you in a miraculous way? That's the vision that I hold for you. Whether things are too short or too long, that is the vision that I hold for you. Now, one more thing. This community is not only limited to this community. We are the community of the world. You know, I think one of the most important things we do here is to hold the vision of wholeness, to hold that in the idea that there is something for us and something against us. If we see that, then beyond that, there is this wholeness that embraces all of it. This community has a global influence. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, and I intend to keep pointing that out to you, but it does. We have a global influence. I got a message from a friend in the Philippines yesterday that I met in India, and she was talking about how she's doing all of these innovative things in theater in the Philippines, and she is using the concept of priceless pricing, which we use here. You know what? And priceless pricing, those are the words that came to me, but those words came to me because of all of you. So all of you are having a global influence. So things like rabbits, things like building a Rabbitat consciously, things like picking a little thing off of a gigantic carrot or a gigantic bunny and getting a toilet paper roll or getting a gift certificate at Petco or something like that. All of that stuff makes a difference. And I look forward to seeing the difference that our garden, that our new garden can make, because it's not just a garden. It's not just a garden, and it's not just a habitat filled with bunnies that we're rescuing from a beautiful source. It is Rumi's field. In fact, we're going to call it Rumi's field. Aww, yay. Thank you. Because in that field, we can move into it, we can go in there, and we can know that, yes, I am not Spartacus, but I am Spartacus. I am darkness, I am light. I am joy, and I am sorrow. I am brokenness, but I am also wholeness. I am grace, and I am beauty. I am spirit, and I am matter. I am compost, and I am flowers. I am fertilizer, and I am food. I am all that I am. I am love becoming love. And so we move into Rumi's field with that consciousness, and then we use that consciousness to bless our lives individually and then to spread it out to the world. Is that not an amazing thing? Is that something you want to participate in? Blessing the world with our goodness. It really needs it right now, and I'm glad you're on board with it. Let us pray.